I'm Logan.
And I'm Ryan.
And this is Automatic for the People.
It's automatic, it's automatic, it's automatic.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Automatic for the People, a Mr. Robot podcast. We are still in the middle, actually right now. I think this puts us smack dab in the middle of our season two rewatch, episode 4 or 6 or however.
12 or...
yeah. Master Slave, which I'm going to just... I know we said this when we talked about it originally. And this may have been the turning point for season two for you when we first watched it, because I know you were kind of like, and you're kind of going back now and like really liking season two, but like a lot of people, you were just like, it's not as been as good as season one, which I will agree, season two wasn't as good as season one, but it's still pretty freaking fantastic. It's a long way of saying, I don't think this is just the best opening Mr. Robot has had. It might be the greatest opening for a television show ever.
Yeah, and you know, I've probably seen it probably 4 or 5 times, because I watched it at least 3 times yesterday. Not the whole episode, just
the opening.
I would rewind it and watch like
15,
the
20 minutes or whatever it is. It went on longer than I remembered.
I would have liked like a whole show like that, honestly. But I mean, I understand that you got a story to tell and you had a time frame to tell it. I like how it was kind of like this journey of Elliot, and Mr. Robot comes off as is nice, but like creepy nice.
Yeah.
And then when you come to the end of it, it's just kind of like, I'm just trying to protect you. And that was really nice, because most of what we've seen of him has been a real jerk all season long. Like, you don't really like him at all.
Yeah. And jerk, I guess is the right way to put it. 'Cause he comes off that way in season one. But like, he's charismatic, and you're like, well, this dude's kind of an ass, but like, I want to follow him and see where he goes. Whereas this season, it's been more like,
yeah. And if you're new to season one, it's not, you're not connecting them so closely, because you're not sure what the relationship they have is until the end of season one.
Yeah.
Even if you think he's imaginary, you don't necessarily know it's his dad till the end of season, like towards the end, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then in this season, you know it's his dad, but he comes off as a like a mean dad, you know, like an abusive dad.
He comes off as Elliot's mom.
yeah, very much.
So,
but it's kind of, I did love that. You know, at the end of the journey there, it's like, I'm just trying to protect you.
Yeah. I was just trying to take those hits for you. And he thinks Elliot's going to lash out at him when he tells him thanks. Although I do question, like, so he's in a hospital, but he's in the hospital in the prison, right? He has to be.
Well, I mean, not necessarily. I used to get chemo and they would bring prisoners in there. Of course, that's, you know, that's, you got to get to a lab. But, I mean, you've seen him in the emergency room. So, not necessarily. It depends on the level of criminal you're talking about. I mean, you wouldn't want to take a mass murderer in some place like a hospital. But seeing as how he's not handcuffed that we can see, I'm going to assume that he's still in the prison.
Yeah. I was watching it going like, okay, I wonder if any of this is actually real.
I mean, for all we know, he's not even being... We didn't see any medical staff. They might have him hooked up just to some machines they've, you know, that Ray's bought. And
yeah. That's true. Yeah. Yeah, I hadn't even thought about that. So, back to the opening stuff, though. The 80s, 90s, late 80s, early 90s, whatever it is, sitcom opening. Like, there's so many things in it that are references to stuff in the previous episodes or stuff we already... Like, Elliot sitting straight up in the snow, you know?
Yeah, that's what... When I say Elliot's journey, that's kind of like... You get the total glimpse of, like, this is how Elliot deals with, you know... When the walls are closing in on him. He retreats to a imaginary world.
And, like, the as it's opening or whatever, you see them, like, at the beach, but then it shows... Like the pier that we've already seen, but it shows it in that hazy, like VHS kind of, so that it looks familiar, but it also looks completely different.
Mm-hmm.
So, I love the old gas pumps though. I also, when I was watching it, I was tweeting, of course, and I tweeted about you getting an original Game Boy.
Yeah, I saw that.
I was like, man, you show this to Casey and be like, that's what it looks like. But then you can't really see it. So,
Darlene acknowledged the fact that he pushed Elliot out the window, too. So, and I think I had questioned that, like, I don't know, sometime this season. Like, do we know for a fact that he pushed him? Or did Elliot just, you know, make that up in his head? But Darlene says it.
Well,
but we're also inside Elliot's head.
Right. So he still has that, you know, thing. I subscribe to the he didn't push him. You know? It just...
Well, I was thinking, you know, it's probably one of those more of a accident and, like, cooler heads could have prevailed, but they didn't. You
right, know, they were kind of getting into an argument, and maybe there was a tussle or Elliot was acting erratically and, you know, tripped and or stumbled.
Okay. Yeah, they were fighting over something or...
Yeah. But hey, Alf is in this episode.
Classic Alf.
Alf kills Gideon again. Like, how messed up is it to see Gideon again, only to have Alf run him over with the car?
This made me want, like, an HBO 30-minute show of, like, Space Ghost Coast to Coast, but with Alf.
Oh, he had a talk show on Nick at Night for a while.
Yeah, and I don't know. You know, I wish I could find... I bet they're on YouTube somewhere, but I wish I could find those. And
yeah.
But I don't know why it's not a thing again, because it would be great.
Well, and there were talks of a revival at some point in the last 2 years or so, and it just never materialized.
I mean, him doing Donald Trump jokes would be fantastic. I mean, how hilarious would that be?
Yeah, talking about, you know, eating Donald Trump's hairpiece because he thinks it's a cat or something. Yeah. Or his comb over, since I guess he doesn't wear a hairpiece. So what do you think's up with them robbing the convenience store in his imagination? Like, that just seems...
That's something on Elliot's journey, like you were talking about, how it you saw other things that have happened before. all I could figure is that's something that we don't necessarily know has happened. But, I mean, robbing a convenience store could be a substitute for so many other things.
Yeah.
I mean, you got away with something. That's
yeah.
There's a lot of things that can...
Like, the only thing I could think was when Elliot took the money from that dude. When we see in the flashback with him and his dad working at the computer store.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it could represent just the hack in general. I mean...
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know what Alf would represent, but it's great that he's in there.
So, not to get too personal and serious, but... last year, or the end of the year before last, when you were sick and in the hospital, and then you were in a coma for a little while, and you talked about, like, having crazy, like, weird-ass dreams and stuff.
Oh, man, you have no idea. I still think about them all the time. But they're, I mean, they're ridiculous, like, being trapped in, like that. Like, I was trapped in something like that. And I think it was because of the TV.
Yeah, that's well. When he wakes up, Alf is on the TV. So, because you're like,
I mean, I was in like murder mysteries and video games.
So this is a pretty fair. Like, so this is what your brain does to you when you're in a coma.
I mean, because that's what it still did to hear me.
Things.
Yeah.
And so your brain is trying to process the information that you're hearing. Which I guess it does that when you sleep.
It felt like a year to me. Like, and then when I finally got to see y'all, I guess that's when I woke up. Mm. I don't know. But I kept trying to get somebody to get me out of there, and nobody would get me out of there. And I was like, well, I guess I'm just going to die here. But these mean nurses kidnapped me. And so I don't know what happened, but I didn't like them at all. So I do remember stuff. It's just like not the way it really happened.
Well, by the time you got to ICU, your nurses weren't mean. So.
Well, they were probably being mean because I weighed 400 pounds and they were probably trying to shove a tube down. Because I definitely remembered that.
Yeah.
Shove a tube down my throat.
Mm.
Mean probably was translated because there was a bunch of people in a rush over me. And it just came off as very mean because they were acting fast. I don't know. But it was definitely weird. But I mean, I saw people I knew, but like my whole life didn't flash before my eyes or anything like that.
Yeah. But it's just.
It is kind of like Elliot's thing, though. I mean,
well,
like,
that's what it made me think of while I was watching. I was like, Ryan talked about like dreaming he was in TV shows and stuff like that, you know, because the TV was on and he could hear it, but, you know. You can't really, you know, your brain can't process all that because it's trying to do other stuff. So it kind of locks you away in that little world so that, you know, you're not always trying to wake up and fight everything. So.
It's pretty weird. My wife does it now when she sleeps. If I'm watching baseball or something. She dreams she's in a baseball game and stuff, but that doesn't happen to me. When I dream, it's usually out of this world.
Yeah. Tyrell getting out of the trunk and hopping into the backdrop is one of... I don't think there's a moment in this show. I don't think there ever will be a moment in this show that's funnier than that.
That means Elliot definitely did something with Tyrell.
Yeah. I mean, we know what happened.
I don't remember.
Okay. I won't spoil that for you.
I mean, you can, because I know I've seen it. And when it happens, I'll be like, oh, yeah, I remember it.
Yeah. Bonsoir, Elliot. I love when he's like, please, by the ankles. These loafers are Italian, or whatever he says. The Darlene's, or their mom, punching Darlene in the face. Do you think that that's proof that she was also physically abusive?
Oh, yeah.
We know
yeah.
she's mentally abusive.
Like, yeah, we've definitely. Seen that.
You know, when Elliot goes to the hospital with the broken arm, like, we saw her just talking like he didn't even matter to the doctors. You know, stuff like that makes you want, like, I know it's a TV show, but we've seen people like that, and you just want to pull people in those relationships aside and be like, why, like, what made you fall in love with this person?
Well, I mean, Elliot had his chance when he was talking to the doctor, and you know, it's, even though that it's a little different when it comes to a mother-son relationship, because most sons aren't going to, you know, tell things about their mother that would get them in trouble. But
I guess we're horrible. We'd rat out our mom in a heartbeat.
We wouldn't send her to prison or anything, though.
No.
That, now you made me lose my train of thought. But that's when you're in a relationship and you're dedicated to somebody, it's hard to get away from that. I mean, and sometimes you feel trapped, like, you know, who else would take me? Da, da, da. You know, there's a list of things. That's why people get stuck in places like that.
Well, like, being abusive to you is one thing, but like watching them be mean to your kid, like that's what kills me.
Well, let's see. This came out, what year did this come out?
I mean, this is 3 years ago.
So 2016, and Elliot would be how old? 27?
Yeah, probably.
So that puts him born in the 80s, right?
Yeah.
It was kind of not totally awful in the 80s to smack your kids every once in a while. Now it's like completely taboo, but it wasn't off the table in the 80s. So maybe it was one of those things. I don't think she necessarily punched them in the face all the time. That's more of like, here's my point. She's abusive.
Right.
but if she smacked them around, you know, smacks in the back of the head, upside the face, whooped them with a belt, like, just overly did it.
You know, I can definitely see that. That the punch is just, and like the cigarette burn, that's like big things to prove a, not that it's small, but big things to prove a smaller point. We're like, well, yeah, she's abusive. Like,
I think Sam Esmail is actually really good at that, because sometimes the story can seem very rushed. When you try to fit all this stuff into one episode or one season, and he's good about fitting a lot of stuff in, but not overdoing it and getting his point across without having to have 18, you know, like, circumstantial events like that would really happen in real life, you know, kind of crap. And it doesn't feel rushed and it doesn't feel forced. And I mean, he does a really good job at that. He's a great storyteller.
Yeah, I'm maybe the best working in television. Well, I don't even think there's a maybe. I think he's the best working in television right now. I wish he was making more movies, because I don't know. He's fantastic. So, but
he is. I loved Comet, but you know, can't just make those kind of movies all the time. And
yeah,
I mean, people don't go see him. You know?
Yeah, and the longer narrative stuff tends to be beneficial for him, I guess, because you're not trying to fit so much into such a confined space. It is interesting that this was written as a movie script and then fleshed out to be a TV show, because when it's all said and done, we're going to have 42 episodes, I think. We don't really know the episode count for the final season, but I'm assuming 10 episodes. So we're going to have 42 pretty much hour-long episodes. So a 42-hour film is what this is. I just clocked it. It's 17 minutes of, and this is one of the shortest episodes, I think, of this season or any season. I mean, it clocks without commercials right at 50 minutes. 17 minutes of the 50 minutes of this episode are a total hallucination. That's a lot of time to dedicate to something that isn't, in the long run, isn't really going to matter. It doesn't really move the story forward. It kind of highlights some of the other issues that Elliot has, but it doesn't add anything to the overall narrative. Like, it doesn't give you any, like, peace to the future, you know? That's pretty ballsy, I think.
No, yeah, I agree. The Angela stuff is pretty great.
I love it. I love the soundtrack to that. You know,
yeah, like, it's very, as much as the beginning is very much, you know, like Taken. I hate to say Taken, because he does it so good. But Natural Born Killers had a lot of scenes that were like that road trip scene.
Yeah.
And the Angela scene with the music, with the cuts in the music, that's very Tarantino, to cut a song like when you don't think it's gonna be cut.
And then pop back in.
And do it with, like, the closing of a door or, like, the opening of a briefcase or, I mean, it's, I hate to compare it because he does it just as good, if not better.
Yeah, it's pretty great. I love stuff like that. I mean, you see it in heist films a lot. Like,
Jackie Brown, that's part of the reason why I love Jackie Brown so much. Because of the soundtrack and the way Tarantino edited that.
Well, Sally Minky edited.
Well, yeah, okay, yeah.
I know they worked hand in hand, and I don't want to get off on that Tarantino
rant. She died, right?
Yeah, she died a few years ago.
You can tell, like, when is...
You can tell. You can really, really tell. I'm not bashing Tarantino, but his work will never be the same. Ever.
Yeah, I just, you're going to get us off, because I got to say, I just watched Hateful Eight, and I don't think it was terrible, but I don't think it was that good. It just didn't catch me.
I still haven't seen it. I've got it on Blu-ray, and I haven't seen it, so, but yeah, her last film with Tarantino was Inglourious Basterds. And you want to talk... I mean, that's like seven movies edited into one narrative, and it's riveting.
Yeah, it is. Inglourious Basterds is great. I can't believe it took me that long to watch that movie.
But yeah, she worked on... I think every film, Inglourious Basterds, Death Proof, Kill Bill 1 and 2, Jackie Brown.
Django would have been great.
Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs.
I think that's my biggest problem with Django, is the soundtrack doesn't seem as great in that movie as it doesn't seem Tarantino, which is, that's her. That's so, what's missing.
Check this out. Guess what movie she edited?
What?
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That was her first huge film.
Well, that's a good one to have. That's, I mean, it'll always be one of our favorites.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I could watch it now and just do the dialogue as the movie's going. It's crazy. So, but yeah, in 1990, Ninja Turtles comes out. She does a few other things. And then from there, she gets Reservoir Dogs. And then, I mean, she didn't do a lot, but what she did, you know, was pretty substantial, you know. So, yeah, it's, his work will never, ever be the same. She also edited Mulholland Falls.
That's a good movie, too.
Yeah. So, her last film was a movie called Peacock, and it came out in 2010. I've never heard of it. But it's got Cillian Murphy, Ellen Page, Susan Sarandon, Josh Lucas, Bill Pullman, Keith Carradine. I've never heard of this movie. Huh. A train accident in rural Nebraska gradually unveils a mystery involving the town's bank clerk.
Huh. I love when I find those little quirky movies that I've never heard of.
Cillian Murphy in drag.
Well, there you go.
I need to see this movie.
He doesn't do enough, like, menacing, gruesome stuff.
That dude's good in anything, man. I don't know how he hasn't had a bigger career. Eventually, I'll get around to watching Peaky Blinders.
He's BBC like Christopher show. Walken.
Because, I mean, it's got a lot of actors in it I really like, and it also looks pretty good. But I thought he was going to be like Christopher Nolan's guy. You know, like how most directors have that like one actor that they seem to propel, you know? And instead he's been like Christopher Nolan's good luck charm almost. Like the guy that just always shows up in every Christopher Nolan movie and doesn't like really go past that. Because, I mean, he has not had a huge, huge movie in a while.
Well, despite what the Scarecrow kind of became, when that movie came out, I was like, this dude is freaking awesome, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it just turned into a kind of a joke when he shows back up. Like, really?
I thought that in 28 Days Later. That was the first thing I really saw him in. And was like, man, this guy's so good. And, I mean, that's still, well, Red Eye, but Red Eye gets kind of pushed to the side as, like, this, like,
well, that's the kind of characters I want to see, but I want to see more of it in like a Hannibal Lecter type kind of way.
Yeah. So anyway, we're getting off on tangents. But yeah, the episode, we get some of the Dark Army interacting with what's his name? Darlene's boyfriend. The needle under the fingernails. Maybe the single biggest...
Yeah,
I said ick moment, but that doesn't even, like, nails on a chalkboard.
I couldn't even look. I was, like, trying to read the subtitles and not look at him do that at the same time.
It's, ugh.
And then you see Angela. What did they shoot him up with?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, then Angela recognizes him at the house.
Yeah.
That I forgot about that.
Yeah, she kind of puts a lot of pieces together there. But it's also important to note that Darlene doesn't know that they've had interactions.
Right.
So Darlene was not part of that. Him, you know.
Yeah, Darlene doesn't. Darlene knows about the CD, but she doesn't know that that's the guy that they got the CD from.
Right.
So he's kind of playing both sides, but yep. he's the lowest man on the totem pole.
Yeah, obviously. And Dom is just the boss in this episode. She's so freaking good. How do we not see her captain or whatever he is? How do we not see that dude was on the take? Because, watching it now, I'm like, well, it's kind of obvious. He's like, yeah, I got lucky. I was in my room. Which is, a thing that could have happened, but...
Oh, I forgot all about that.
Just watching it now, I'm like, and he's so obviously trying to get her not to be.
So that's totally why he wants her gone for 4 months.
Yeah, because she's on the
a month or yeah. What is it? A month? Yeah, 4 weeks. Like yeah.
So that he can kind of.
Derail the investigation.
Yeah. So.
Oh, they're just some stupid hackers. No, they're really not.
And Price talking to that dude.
Like on a the congressman phone. Or something, right?
That or dude on the phone sounds like Harrison Ford. I was listening to it yesterday and I was like, that sounds like Harrison Ford. I mean, I know it isn't, but it sounds like Harrison Ford. So, but yeah, Price is kind of getting thrown under the bus here because what he thought was going to happen isn't what's happening. And that's due to White Rose, who has her own agenda.
And who has completely cut him off, apparently.
Yeah. Trenton and Mobley back in this episode trying to teach Angela how to hack.
For a second she was on that computer and typing. And I was like, wait, last year she didn't even know what a freaking whatchacallit was. And now, yeah. And then he was like, I can't teach her to ask it. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right.
Which, I mean, so they're trying to teach her all this stuff. And basically, she just gets talked through on the phone.
That's what I don't get either. If y'all were going to talk on the phone, why did she need to practice? All she needed you to tell her was what to write into the code.
Yeah.
She didn't have to practice doing it.
I mean, it helps that she kind of has a basic understanding of it. But like they said, I don't even think you can teach a basic understanding of it in 2 days. So, and not to get into, it's not really about her looks, but Angela, as we've seen her, is such a well put together, tidy, kept person that if you watch this episode, keeping that in mind, she looks disheveled for her. Her hair's just a little bit too messy, you know? Her ponytail's not quite straight. Her blouse is a little crooked. So, it's this is a chick that isn't sleeping. And she's starting to get frayed at both ends. So, seeing the unraveling of Angela.
You can see that when she's on the computer and she's repeating that phrase to herself.
Yep.
I will succeed or whatever it is over and over again. And what's his name? You can't talk to yourself while you're doing this, yeah. Right?
I love Mobley. This show could have had so many great spinoffs, you know, Trenton and Mobley, you know, hacking, you know, this kind of show where they're working with the feds after they get caught or something to be hackers and catch bad guys, you know, vigilante hackers or something like that. Or working with Dom. That would have been great.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
And that little spinoff show. Anyway.
What's the girl's name that plays Dom?
asked me and put me on the freaking spot.
Anyway, she has that thing that I'm going to call her by her character name. Grace. Yeah. Olivia from Law & Order SVU. She has that, like, commanding presence. And Grace Gummer totally has that. And plus she's redheaded, so that helps. So a cop show, or like a, not like SVU, not that kind of cop show, more of like a, what she's doing now.
Right.
Espionage and stuff like that. That would be, that, I think that'd be a super great show. And it's really too bad we're never going to get to see it.
So, do you watch Manifest?
Unfortunately, yes.
So, Michael Dreyer, who plays Cisco, Darlene's boyfriend, he's on that show, right?
I don't know. Maybe.
He's kind of a chameleon.
Is that the same guy?
I was just wondering if it's... I mean, because he's one of those guys that shows up and stuff, and you're like, oh, yeah. I know he's in Sneaky Pete, and I want to watch Sneaky Pete. I just...
Oh, yeah, I always see the commercial for that, and I'm like, man, I need to watch that. Yeah,
like, I really want to watch that show, and I never get around to it.
What's his name?
Michael Dreyer. Drayer.
Let me see who he plays. Oh, he's not one of the main guys, so. Well, top listed guys.
Like, I remember he was in The Following for a few episodes. He's such a good... I listen to Kevin Smith's podcast, and whenever they talk about character actors, he calls them the glue. You know, and he's good at being that. Like, just... That brief scene with him and Angela is so, so freaking good.
That's to go back to Tarantino again. That's one of the reasons I love a lot of his movies. And even take True Romance and Natural Born Killers out of it. But he has those good go-to guys, and he always goes to them, and they always hit it out of the ballpark.
Yeah. When I was rewatching it, I was like, I totally forgot about that dude hitting on Angela. Like, he doesn't, like, she walks by and he checks out her ass and says something to her. So, and then apparently waits around for her to get out of the bathroom to hit on her again. Like, what a creep, man. Who waits outside? Well, actually, we know somebody that did that. But who waits outside of a bathroom for somebody to come out so they can hit them?
I mean, it depends, but this guy was obviously just being a, you know, pig.
Yeah.
But, you know, you never know. You might pass her one day in the hallway and just say, well, I got to go talk to this girl. And if you got to do coming what you got to do. Coming out of
the bathroom?
I wouldn't stand, like, right by the bathroom. I might stand, like, near a water cooler or something and wait for her to walk back by.
And he obviously sucks, because one of the first things he said is, it's like, well, you were in there for a while. That's not a comment you make, really, to anybody coming out of the bathroom, but definitely not a woman, and definitely not a woman you're trying to pick up. Like, what the hell is that about?
Yeah, I didn't get the comment either. I was like, where did he think that was going to get him? What answer were you looking for? Most women, like, I know that go into the bathroom
don't take
just as long as she did. Even for the show, she wasn't in there very long.
Yeah.
Like, she stared at you not saying anything almost as long as she was in the bathroom.
The editing of all of that is so good. Like, with them on the other, with them in her ear, and then that conversation happening in real time. Like, and them like feeding her information. It's so good.
She gets kind of like an overload though. She's like, oh my God, I don't see how she talked at all. Yeah. I would have been like, this is too much.
You remember that episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine where they're on they get the new captain, and Terry and Jake go on that undercover mission, and the new captain goes with them, and he's like on the earpiece talking the whole time. He's like, there's somebody out here walking their dog. Should I be suspicious? I think. Oh, nope. He's gone. And he just keeps talking, and they just lose it in the middle of their sting operation. They're like, shut up. Yeah, that would be me. Like, I can't have.
Was that the moron captain that they had?
Yeah. Who is always playing the music. And, yeah. Anyway, that would be me. I like Mobley forcing a call to his phone from his mom. That was pretty good. So he's like, this dude calls his mom a lot. this was like a good, but it starts with the 80s flashback stuff, and then we get like a heist episode out of it with Angela doing all her stuff. You know, it's a good kind of combination. Like, it's a well-rounded episode.
I agree. I think this was a hook episode for me. Like, okay, you got me for this season. I'm in.
Yeah.
And a rewatch was definitely, I should have rewatched this episode a long time ago. I really want to watch it again. I'd like to talk about it again. There's a lot of stuff in this episode.
Yeah. There's a lot of hacker stuff. Which they make it seem a lot easier than it has to be. Of course, we end on, like, in the quote-unquote present day, everybody almost ends on this weird little cliffhanger. Because, like, Angela ends with Dom coming to her desk. You know, we don't get the resolution to that. And then Elliot ends well with the hug. It's more of a happier moment. But the episode itself, though, ends with a flashback. And, I mean, it's hard to overestimate how important that flashback is to really see Elliot and his dad's relationship. Like, there's
I think it's a nice contrast to what we've seen and what we see at the beginning of the episode, definitely.
Yeah.
To where the end of the episode, it's, oh, he's protecting Elliot. Like, he really does care about Elliot. It's not just some mean old man in his head.
Well, I wonder if it's one of those things. So, our dad was fine, but he wasn't always the best or ever really the best. He would lose his temper, yada, yada, yada. He didn't put a cigarette out on us. So, looking back at it now, and like, we were watching some, I think at Christmas, he had some like old home movie stuff that he had made,
yeah, which
is weird. And like listening to us interact with each other, I was like, I don't even like these people.
We're a bunch of jerks.
Yeah. Like, what is wrong with, and maybe I do still come across that way sometimes, but like, we're a bunch of a-hole kids, man. Like, I would have been losing my mind, too. I'm like, all y'all do is argue and put each other down. Like, stop. you're driving me insane. So I wonder if it's a little of that, too. Like, Elliot kind of thinking that his dad was a lot worse than he was. And you look at Elliot as a kid. And we saw it in a few episodes. Well, specifically the episode where they go to the movies, I guess. We see him at the movie theater, and his dad kind of falls down, and Elliot goes into the movies anyway or whatever. Like, Elliot was just a jerk kid, you know? Like, he stole that dude's money.
Well, I mean, most kids are jerks, man.
Yeah. At some point, at least, you know. If you give them the opportunity, it just, yeah. Anyway, my point being that, like, Elliot might have moments where he thought his dad was being a horrible person, but maybe Elliot was just a terrible kid, so.
Or a little bit of both.
Yeah, yeah. It's never one absolute or the other. It's usually a mixture of the two, but, you know, it can create a bad memory, I guess. Which is always one-sided anyway. So, the way you remember things isn't always the way they are. Which is weird, because they rely on people remembering stuff for testimony all the time. Like, memory's so fallible, you know?
That's funny. That could get us off into a major
Well, you watch a lot of that crime stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and to watch somebody convince themselves of something that has... I mean, I've been in a relationship where somebody has convinced themselves that this is the way it happened. And for them, I guess that's the truth. And for me, I'm just like, that's not how I remember it at all. Like, yes, maybe I was being unreasonable here or there or whatever, but like, you make it sound like something that was just like I set your house on fire, you know, or something like that. So anyway,
there's this show Mindhunter on Netflix. Yeah, I know you haven't watched it, but
I want to watch it, but no,
it's really good. Well, they go and talk to these serial killers. And, well, at the time, the phrase hadn't been, you know, serial killer didn't exist. They were, like, spree killers or, you know, stuff like that. But, and they talk to these guys, and they want to know, you know, what they remember about crimes. And the ones that won't admit that they did a crime, they'll talk about the crimes they've been convicted of. And, like, so what would the killer have been thinking here? And to hear them tell their stories, like, the way they remember it, it's like a love story.
It's so weird.
But, yeah, but, and, you know, I mean, all actuality is just utter brutality, not to be a poet, but... I want to find the guy. He's in, is it Umbrella Academy? Yeah, he's in Umbrella Academy. He plays one of the, I don't know if you've got there yet. He's kind of like a hitman from the future.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he's with
that chick, and they're always wearing the masks.
It's not just a chick. That's like Mary J. Blige.
I guess I'm not paying close enough attention to what the show while I'm watching it.
I didn't realize it was her either until I think I was paying attention to the credits.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you can...
Yeah, that's Mary J. Blige.
You can skip the intros and stuff, so...
Yeah.
What's her partner? What's his name? He's Cameron Britton. I don't know if you've ever seen this guy in anything, but he's in Mindhunter a lot. And let's see... He plays a guy named Edmund Kemper. And if you'll just watch his scenes, the way he talks about, like, killing these people and what he did is so intense. It's ridiculous. And it sounds like he's, you know, telling something that's just completely unbelievable. But he believes it in his mind.
No, but he was in a show that I really, really wanted to watch called Stitchers. I think it was on like Sci-Fi or something.
Oh, he was in it a lot. I might have to check that. This dude is great, man.
So here's the plot. A young woman is recruited into a secret government agency to be stitched into the minds of the recently deceased, using their memories to investigate murders.
Well, that sounds pretty cool. That's like Fringy stuff right there.
Yeah. I would see like the poster for it or like an ad for it online sometimes. And I just feel like I really want to watch that show. And I just would never get around to it. I don't remember what station it was on. Sci-Fi, USA, something like that. So,
well, that Mindhunter and Umbrella Academy are his biggest roles.
Yeah. Yeah. He hasn't done much. So, well, I do like him and her in Umbrella Academy. I just got to the episode where they raid the house, and they're like, who the hell are these people?
Dude, I love that part, man. It's to go back on Tarantino again, but it's like imagining Jules and, I forgot their names. But showing Vincent. Up and all these guys, yeah, and Vincent, and all these guys got like superpowers and stuff.
Yeah.
Just like, oh my God, who are these guys?
Well, I didn't get it because I thought they were like, and don't spoil it for me, but it feels to me like they're time hitmen. Like they travel in time.
You got to finish this
show. To assassinate people. And I was like, so how do they not know who the Umbrella Academy is?
By the end of this show, you're going to agree with me that Cameron Britton is, he really needs to do more stuff.
I'm really digging it so far. It's nice to see Robert Sheehan doing something that doesn't suck, because he plays this character Nathan in a show called Misfits that you absolutely should watch.
Yeah, I think I've seen like two episodes.
He's so freaking good. And he left the show to kind of pursue a bigger career in film, I guess. Because he was getting a lot of buzz from being on that show. He goes and does Season of the Witch with Nicolas Cage. And then he does it just came out. Hold on, I'll find it. I just remember thinking like, man, it sucks he's leaving. And then he shows it. Oh, Geostorm. Like, he's in Geostorm, which I'm pretty sure sat on a shelf for like 2.5 or 3 years before it finally got released. He's in Mortal Engines, which I want to see. He's also in Mortal Instruments. That was the other movie he was in. City of Bones, which is based on a book, much like Mortal Engines. And it's just terrible. His career didn't really take off like it should have. So...
While we're on fantastic. Umbrella Academy still, I like the dude that plays the one that still is a superhero, the Batman type character.
Yeah. That cop is like, you still don't get not to touch forensic evidence.
Yeah, his name is David Castaneda. And he's a writer director too. And he's got a TV movie and it's a short. But that's cool. He's a writer-director, too. But he hasn't done much either, man. But he's really good.
So, it wasn't until... I'm on episode 3. I just finished 3, so I'm going into 4. It wasn't until then, like... Because I've seen him in the show, and I've seen, like, the posters, and it irked me that he was so disproportionate. Tom Hopper, that plays Luther
See, which one is Luther?
Is short hair, kind of.
Oh, he's the one that's like the big dude.
Yeah, I didn't understand that. Like, he had like this literally ape type body, and that's why he was so big. Because, like, I just get like, why does he look so weird? Like, does that guy really look like that? And then you see him without his shirt on, and at the end of the, after the fight scene, or the mansion raid or whatever, in the third episode, and I was like, oh, okay, I think I got it now. Like, he's, that's his thing. Like, he's like the Beast, only his head didn't mutate.
Right.
He still got a normal head, so.
I think they if you haven't got to that part, they explain why he's got a body that way.
Yeah, I haven't got to that part. Or if I did, I missed it, so.
He was in Game of Thrones for a little while.
Yeah.
4 or 5 episodes.
Yeah. I love Adam Godley as Pogo, and I know it's probably a budgetary thing, but we haven't seen enough of Pogo. Like, it's so good. It looks so good.
Yeah, it does look really good. For a TV show, I mean,
it looks better than The Lord of the Rings, which I know we've had advancements, but The Lord of the Rings had a huge budget, and it looks better that this monkey looks better than Smeagol ever did. Like, it looks so freaking good. And I'm sure it's a budgetary thing is why we haven't seen more of him. Which is fine, you know, save it for when it counts. But yeah, I'm really digging the show. So.
Well, it's really, some of the ending I could have, you know, done without. Or I think they could have done a better job, not done without. But for the most part, for a you know, comic booky TV show, it's really good.
Yeah. I like which worries me, because when he showed up, I was like, oh, this guy's I'm not gonna like. And I was like, oh, I kind of like him. And now I'm on the fence on, is he a creep? Is he not a creep? Don't spoil it for me. Even though I've read the first series. John Magaro or Magaro, I don't know how to say his name. He's the dude taking lessons from Ellen Page that kind of hit on her.
Oh, yeah.
Peabody or whatever his name is. I really like that dude. I think he's a good actor.
I know I've seen him in a bunch of stuff. I just have no idea. What's his name?
John Magaro, I guess. Magaro. Yeah, he was in Orange is the New Black for.
I was just in Jack weeks. Ryan. That's right. I've seen
Jack Ryan. So. Yeah, he's in the Big Short. And.
Of course, he's been in SVU. Everybody's been in
SVU. It's been on for 20 years. He's in this movie called The Box, which Richard Kelly, the guy that did Donnie Darko, wrote and directed. And I really like that movie, but like I said, I also really like him. So, don't spoil anything.
I'm not. I really want to, but I'm not going to.
When they run into her sister, and he's like, aren't you one of those umbrella people? And he looks at her, he's like, you're not one of them, are you? Like, yeah, way to make her feel like she'll have enough people telling her she doesn't belong. So, no wonder this girl's going to go nuts and burn the world down. Sorry.
Well, I mean, what is that in the books or something?
What? Her going nuts and burning the world down?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, well, damn, you hit that nail right on the head.
Although, 5 or whatever his name is.
He's like, great, dude.
Yeah, that kid.
I love that they've got the kid.
Yeah, that he's still a kid.
And he's the smartest, most responsible one. Even though he does make some decisions later on that are like, was that really that smart, man? But
I don't understand how he hadn't put it together, though. Like, why he doesn't know.
And I couldn't understand that either. I couldn't understand it. But there's some other stuff that comes into play, and I can't really talk about it without... I'm not sure what I'm going to spoil or not. But there was a lot of times where I'm like, how am I seeing this puzzle before you? Because I'm the one that's supposed to be like, oh, not you. You're the one that's supposed to have it put together.
The thing with the mannequin is great, though.
Yeah, that's a nice running season-long thing with the mannequin.
When they show up in the van, he's like, how'd you find me? And he points to Robert Sheehan in the back, and he's like molesting them. He's like, hey, stop that. I'm telling you, man, if you like Robert Sheehan in this show, you should check out The Misfits. It would be a good companion. I think it's all, I think they're all on Hulu. Misfits also has,
there was a good amount of people in Misfits that I've seen in other stuff. Cause I know I'll look them up and, oh, they were in Misfits. And you've been telling me to watch that show for like 10 years.
Well, Joseph Gilgan, who takes Robert Sheehan's place when he leaves the show. Like, he's the character they bring in to be this kind of erratic guy.
Yeah, and they're like Cassidy. Almost like the same kind of guy.
Yeah. He's in it. He's fantastic. I don't know how to say his name, but we've talked about him before. Ewan Rion.
Yeah, he might have been the
only
decent part about Inhumans.
Yeah. He's really good as Maximus. He's in it. Let's see who else is. I mean, a lot of other British actors show up in it. A lot of people have guest spots in it. Some of the people that like were on the show consistently, like I haven't really seen in anything big since then. Which sucks because I think everybody's really, really good in the show.
A lot of them probably do British TV and we don't watch it. So
Antonia Thomas is in this show called Lovesick that's on Netflix now. That's a British show that's fantastic. Oops. And I adore her, man.
Sorry, I unplugged my headphones by accident.
That's all right. So. Anyway, yeah. If you enjoy Umbrella Academy, you should go check out Misfits. I want to talk about this one awesome thing in Misfits, but...
Hey, I'm not spoiling Umbrella Academy for you. Even though, to be fair, Misfits is like 10 years old now, so...
Yeah, and it's not a spoiler because you know he shows back up.
I mean, I've seen like the first, I know at least like 3 or 4 episodes. Because I did start watching it at one point. Because I think something was coming out and you were like, if you're going to watch that, you should watch The Misfits first because it's going to be like totally the same thing. Or something. I don't remember what it was. But you wanted me to watch Misfits. It might have been talking about Preacher. Started coming on.
Well, you got to get through like 3 seasons of The Misfits before you get to Joseph Gilgan. And there's a lot of like, can time travel in it. That's really, even whatever his name is. Anyway, similar to Umbrella Academy, Robert Sheehan plays his character. So this event happens, and all these kids wind up getting superpowers. And Robert Sheehan, doesn't. Like, he's with them, and he doesn't get powers. So, like, all this stuff is happening in the first season, and he does not have any powers. And he's so pissed off about it. So, and I figured it out. You'd figure it out, too. Because you know he shows up in other, and, like, he's in the, like, second and third season. So, through the whole thing, I'm like, his superpower is going to wind up being that he's immortal or he can't be killed or whatever. And at the end of season one, he gets killed. And they bury him and have a funeral. And it ends with him waking up in the casket. It's so freaking funny. You gotta watch it, man.
I just want to stop off for a second. I'm gonna text Jamie back now, though.
Okay. Sorry. Are you there?
That's all right. Yeah. So you didn't hear any of that?
No, I did.
Oh, okay. I was gonna say, I didn't even. And it's not really a spoiler because when it happens, you're like, well, he's in season two. So. It's just, and by the time you got there, you'd have been like, oh, well, yeah, he's immortal. Because that's obviously what a superpower is.
I might have watched the whole first season.
Because you remember that?
I mean, it seems like I remember that.
Bergen used to watch it. And me and Bergen would talk about it all the time. And, when he was watching he kept asking me about it because I was a season ahead of him. And I was like, just wait, man. Just wait. Like, you'll get there. You'll get there. At the end of season one, he was like, that was awesome. I was like, yeah, it's so funny, man. Like, they have this funeral and it's like, well, damn, he's dead. And he's just alive in the casket. It's like, well, guess I'm hanging out here for eternity. It's pretty funny. He's good. I'm glad he's back in something that's high profile. So
maybe that can replace one of these multiple shows that are about to go off the air that I don't have to watch anymore.
Anyway, I don't think I had anything else about Mr. Robot.
No, yeah, we kind of fell off into a...
Yeah. I mean, a third of the episode is, like I said, the sitcom thing.
I was reading one dude's review of it, and he said he really loved that, but either it should have been a lot shorter, or it should have taken up the whole episode. I can semi-agree with that, although I don't think that you could have maintained the greatness for 50 minutes.
No. And you do need other stuff. I mean, it's almost the length of an episode of a sitcom. So it's 5 minutes shy of being the length of an episode of a sitcom. So,
maybe you could have wound it into the episode more. Or I don't want to say weaved, but weaved it to where it lasted almost the whole episode.
Yeah.
But still had the same amount of minutes.
Yeah, but then you don't. Then you're at Elliot waking up at the end of the episode.
Yeah,
then everything's
happening
around Elliot.
That's what I'm thinking too. Then you lose that realization that Elliot has of waking up and learning that, you know, Mr. Robot is just, you know, he's just trying to protect him from, which is, you know, pretty accurate because Elliot obviously retreats to Fantasyland whenever, you know, the crap hits the fan. So,
when Angel was like walking through the E-Corp building, all I could think about is the episode in season three where everything's chaos and Elliot's running around through the E-Corp building.
Yeah, it does kind of mirror that.
Anyway, tweet us at Mr. Robot Podcast. Email us Mr. Robot Podcast at gmail.com. Go find everything else we do at xwingfiles.com. And I guess we'll be back in a few days. I mean, 2 days in a row, we've got an episode.
Yay.
So, and we're halfway through. So we'll probably, I mean, I assume we'll try to get at least one or two more in maybe this week. That'll put us pretty close to the end. Next weekend is, well, when I don't know when you're listening to this, but it's our birthday. I doubt we're going to be podcasting anything our birthday weekend unless we might have time. I don't know. We'll see. So, although I thought about doing a podcast Monday night. So,
yeah, that's our birthday. So,
because we'll go see Captain Marvel hopefully on Monday. We'll see. Anyway, go do all that stuff. Go rate and review us on iTunes. I don't think we've gotten a rating in a while. And we'll be back in a few.
Bye, everybody.
Here's a little wedge for the never believer. Yeah, 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 yeah. Here's a little ghost for the offering. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Here's a truck stop instead of St. Peter's. Yeah, 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 yeah. Mr. Andy Kaufman's gone wrestling.